you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Greetings, citizens of Earth and all beings, both extraterrestrial and interdimensional. My name is Danny Roth, and this is Who Won the Week, Sci-Fi Wire's podcast dedicated to the top stories from the week in geek. I am joined this week by my friends, Sci-Fi Wire's own editor-in-chief, Adam Swiderski, the Sci-Fi Wire features editor, Jordan Zacharin.
And Nella!
My buddy Antonella and Sarah is also here. How do we define you? You do a video series. You got a kind of, what do you do?
Explain yourself.
Explain yourself. Yes, our
I like to explain things on YouTube, mainly involving maps. I will be launching a apocalypse book club at the end of this month with my friend Raven. You might know her.
No, never heard of her.
Yeah, not like she's your wife or anything.
Anyway, all right. Lots of people. It's like a 4-person podcast.
Right.
But it's been kind of a quiet week, so there's not. We're going to talk a little bit about some ongoing Star Wars stuff that just seems to never die. And also, Ant-Man and the Wasp came out, and that's nice, and we'll talk about that.
That was fun.
It was fun, but we'll talk about the specifics of the fun in a moment, because first, we've been doing this thing for, I think, like 140 episodes or something. We're at the top of the podcast. We talk about things that we're personally geeking out about, give you a little bit of insight into the minutiae of nerddom and our specific tastes. Adam, we've been doing it for 2.5 years. Should we continue?
Hold on 1 second. Yes. I flipped a coin and the coin came up.
Your
yes.
Enthusiasm is boundless.
The coin actually says yes on it, which I was not expecting. So that's definitely a sign that we should.
But
keep
does it
going.
Say yes on the other side too?
I don't know. I'm afraid to look.
Yeah, yeah. I don't need to know. Don't reveal the magic. I don't want to know the secrets. All right, so we'll do it. Adam.
No, I should go last.
Oh, really?
Because if it's going to roll into the topic that we're going to talk about.
Oh, that does make sense. That does make sense. All right, Jordan.
Well. I don't know how 100% geeky this is, but I have been with my girlfriend binge watching Glow, the second season.
Danny and I were talking about that before the podcast.
It has been on my mind. It's been out on Adam's mind.
I mean, the first season was great, and this season is just as great.
And it might even be better.
Yeah, and what's great is that they're half an hour episodes. You don't have to have like an hour long, 14 episode Netflix show, which a lot of them drag. This is the nice, tight, smart show with a lot of characters, and you get a glimpse further into each of them. So I've been really digging that every night. I don't know how geeky that is, but I mean, it's wrestling. Geeks like wrestling.
Here's what I know. The Sci-Fi Network has certainly aired its fair share of wrestling in the past. And so I certainly consider it to be on brand. I think it has the best pacing of any show that Netflix has ever produced.
I would argue that season one of Stranger Things is paced a little better, only because it's an hour show with hour-long episodes, and that never felt like a drag to me, and that was... That's a challenge in and of itself, but I'm only marginally.
The nice thing about this show is that Stranger Things has its fair share and fair number of characters, definitely different groups of characters, especially in the second season. But this show, so many characters, and while you can't devote a ton of time to each, we know more about them this season, and I actually care about them, which is getting harder and harder to do with in our age of like bad leads and antiheroes.
Who is your favorite character?
Favorite character? I really like Sheila. She's great.
Yes.
And
wait, are you done watching the season or no?
I have like 2 episodes left.
Okay. Okay.
All right. So
we'll be cool.
So I'm
going to
be rewarded for my fandom of Sheila.
Yeah. I think maybe. So. I would say yes.
Have you watched episode 8 yet?
Which is the one with the hospital?
No. Episode 8 is the one that's basically like an episode of Glow.
Oh no, I haven't.
The Good Twin, it's called.
I like that when they show it, it looks like VHS.
Oh my God. You know. Episode 8 is brilliant. It's basically tonight. Just like you're watching an episode of the show they're producing, and it's really, excuse my language, but well done. And
that's
funny.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it. Julia, my girlfriend, hates Debbie more than I think like she hates anyone in real life.
Oh, and that's the thing. I like how flawed Debbie is?
Sure. Yeah, I get it. I think it was the thing that happened at episode end of episode six. That
yes,
really
yes certainly. There are good reasons. If someone said, I hate Debbie, I would not be like, why?
I think also just
what a mystery.
The stuff with the exec, I think, you know.
Yeah, that I hate her more for that than I hate her for what she physically did to Ruth.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that like made her really hate her. And then, you know. Anyways, go watch Glow season two. It's really good.
Yeah. Man, that was potentially going to be my thing. So I'll think of something else. No, I've got.
Did anyone here? I'm dating myself. Did anyone here actually watch Glow when it was on television?
The original
Glow.
No, I didn't. I was watching.
I'm so old.
I was watching the WWF at the time.
Yeah, I remember that.
I absolutely watched, and I watched the cartoon. Do you remember the cartoon where it was like Macho Man was like had his team of bad guys, and Hulk Hogan had his team of good guys?
I remember the toys from it. I don't think I watched the cartoon itself.
Yeah.
But no, there. I remember seeing episodes of actual Glow
at
on
like
television
2 a.m.
when I was a kid. No, it didn't air at 2 a.m. It was a Saturday. I mean, it was a Saturday morning show, nationally syndicated for a little while. I mean, that's what they've kind of played fast and loose with some of the history. Sure. There's actually also on Netflix, if you haven't watched it, a really great documentary about Glow, the actual Glow.
Right.
That is, especially if you are a fan of Glow, the TV show, it's definitely worth a watch to see that some of the real people behind this whole endeavor.
Quality.
Yeah.
Hey, Nella.
Yeah.
What's going on with you this week?
I got two things. Steven Universe is back, and
I've only watched the first episode.
I already got
spoiled.
I mean, but yeah, the internet will do that.
Yeah, I'm bummed about that. I watched the first episode. It's good though. I mean, Steven Universe is the best.
Well, I mean, you know, bless Tumblr and its Tumblr heart, who always wants to hate your problematic fave. And Rose Quartz definitely got it the last round.
Oh, she is deeply problematic as a character.
Yeah, but. You know, the show continues to do the thing where it allows its characters to be way more complex than a 15-minute cartoon has any right to be. So it's always a delight, and I'm so glad it's back for the next bomb.
Yeah, I am looking forward to watching the remainder of the episodes. And I don't know. I like all the problematic characters. Like, people don't like Pearl. And I was like, why?
Why? Pearl's the best. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, Pearl has always been my favorite character. She's the character I most wish I was like and am not remotely like.
Pearl was my grandma's name.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I want to be like your grandma.
She's dead.
Oh. Not that part.
Not that part. But
she's nice.
Yeah, I believe it.
That took a dark turn.
It did. It was great, though.
Honestly, she was like, she was kind of cold. We don't have to keep going with this, but I just wanted to point out.
Did she love very, very large space gems with curly pink hair?
Probably. I think she had pink hair. That's something.
Hey.
See, there you go.
Yeah.
It's all coming together.
Crossover potential.
So what's thing number two?
So thing number two is last night I was part of the Modiphius Star Trek Adventures role-playing game. My friend was running a game of it. Our crew is a mess. But I'm loving it. It's a pretty fun system. It's inverse D&D, where low highs are better instead of a D20. So
that's old school. That's like AD&D.
Yeah. So it's like I was greatly enjoying it. We haven't really gotten to a spacecraft battle yet, so that's next session. But the away team stuff is a lot of fun. We're playing in the original series sort of timescape. I got a little saucy because I'm the only female character on the crew so far, and the plant spores made me paranoid, and I'm like, guys, this is really original series right now. I don't know how I feel about this. But it's from playing
at
least
once, like a princess dress didn't appear and you put it on.
I mean,
and,
at least there's that.
We need you to
infiltrate this alien society by putting on this miniskirt.
Yeah.
Truth be told, I am playing a Denoblian chief engineer. So, you're allowed to play Denoblians in original series in the game.
That's pretty cool.
I don't know what race that is. What race is it?
Denoblians are from Enterprise. Dr. Phlox is a Denoblian.
Okay.
They have like six spouses or whatever it is.
Yeah,
that's their whole thing.
And their family structures become incredibly overlapping because you
every
can be
person
married.
Can have six spouses.
Yeah,
right? Yeah,
but your spouses aren't married to each other.
Right.
They additionally have six spouses. And then there are millions of children and nobody knows only Denoblians know who they're related to and everyone else just throws their hands up. It's a fun concept to play around with.
I didn't know who I was related to.
What's the name of your ship?
It's an Andorian ice cutter because our captain is Andorian. It's named after like the Andorian ship that circumnavigated Andoria, the Kermata.
You're looking at me like, I'll know. And the answer is, I don't.
When he said it, I was like,
we're bad fans now.
Yeah.
I'm here for it. We don't know
about the Andorian ship circumnavigated.
No, but I kind
it's
of
right
need,
on the tip of my tongue.
I think I kind of need this in my life. I didn't realize there was a Star Trek role-playing game.
Yeah, it's fun.
Because I've been, you know, I got the D&D stuff, but I haven't. That game died a while back, the game that I was had going on, and
well, let me,
I don't
let,
have...
Let me remind you of the following. There are... How many? There's a solid number of us in this office that all live off the same line in the same neighborhood.
That's true.
We could very easily play this game.
That's true. I just need someone else to organize it.
All right.
I expend all my organizational energy here at work. Beyond
I'm just
that,
saying,
I
think
nothing.
We could get, like, maybe we can get, well, I wanted to say, like, we'll have Brian do it, but I don't know.
Ankh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, because Anne could play. He would definitely play.
Yeah.
We'll get Christiane to do it. We'll
there
get
his, you go.
We'll
She'd
get,
be great.
She'll definitely be the leader. Anyway, all right. That's like a very niche conversation.
Yeah.
Hey, do you want to ask?
Danny.
Yeah, what?
Just out of curiosity.
Yes.
What are you into? What are you geeking out about this week?
Glow Season 2. No. Yeah. I mean, it is. I did watch the whole thing, and it's real good.
So you're kind of more geeking out than I am.
I guess so.
I mean, I got
by
back
three.
From
by,
a trip.
By exact number of three.
To be fair, I got back from a trip on Monday, so I was handicapped in that way.
Yeah.
Anyways, continue.
I don't think that's a handicap, but all right.
I just didn't have time to watch.
Okay. My game that I play all the time, Dead by Daylight, got a big update this week. And I like when games get big updates, especially like online games that have a sort of asymmetrical structure, wherein there's a big, tough killer, and then you're a survivor and you're trying to get away. I mean, you could play as the killer, but I very rarely do. But every time an update comes through, it sort of like messes with the mechanics in a way and sort of feels like you're playing a new game again. And there's new items that you can purchase now. You can get like clothes for your character, which I couldn't really do before. And I don't know. New stuff to unlock, new stages, new killers. It's a delight. I love that game very much. I don't know why, but like I'm just constantly addicted to it. And if I start playing it, I will play it for hours.
This is such an interesting... As someone who has been in the video game space for a long, long time and used to journalize about it and everything, it's just so interesting how this has happened now where games have such a longer life than they used to. And
yeah.
These updates happen and stuff like that instead of just a sequel. You know, it used to be that would never happen. It would have been like, what is it, Dead by Daylight 2? You know,
we'd be on number three or four by now.
Just to add like incremental features. And now, I mean, it's a much more profitable model, I'm assuming, for the publisher as well, just to not have to churn out an entire new product and market it and everything. But it's like, it's just so fascinating to see that this is where we are now.
It's also got to be crazy for like someone who's a completionist. You know, like you do every side quest in a game.
That's why I can't ever play these online games and stuff because they never end. And
I don't like playing with other people. That's why I don't like playing
online. Well, that
too. I like going home and playing Zelda and just not looking at the world for a minute.
Here's my selling point for Dead by Daylight. There's a because I also do not like playing with other people. There is no audio.
Voice chat, right?
There is no voice chat in the game.
Nice.
That is the whole point of it, is that the killer obviously is not going to talk, and you and your fellow survivors cannot speak to each other. It's to heighten the fear level, supposedly, but from my perspective, it is to decrease my hatred of humanity factor. So, yeah, it's great. I don't have to think about who it is that's playing the game. Like, the worst I have to deal with is, like, some of the killers will be, like, babysitters. Like, they'll put you on a hook, and then they'll just wait for you to die instead of, like, running around trying to get other people.
See, all
like,
I can imagine is all the people chill. You would leave on hooks if they could speak.
Oh, yeah.
And then you would be like, man, I would have pulled you off that hook, but you're awful.
Yeah, that would
you
be kind of funny.
You annoyed me.
Yeah, you're the worst. Anyway, you know, I like the game because, yeah, nobody can talk. And, yeah, they keep updating it. This update was really big. And, yeah, I mean, they'll make a lot of money off of this one specifically because while the update itself costs nothing, they have now added all of these components for new things that you can buy, like the fact that you can buy whole new costumes or just a hat or whatever. Like, you can, like, that's the thing. You know what? What am I losing out on if I don't buy a hat? But I'll tell you, I like some of those hats, so I probably will spend some money.
Like, what would a hat cost?
They haven't actually, like, so they've added in the mechanic, but they're not actually finishing it up until I think next week when you'll actually start be able to make the in-game purchases.
So you would say they're finishing the hat?
Yes.
That is a deep cut musical theater reference for those of you out there.
Yeah. That's a bit of a hat on a hat, really.
Yeah.
Anyway, Yeah, Dead by Daylight. If you're getting bored of Fortnite or what's that other one that people like? There's like a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, I don't know.
Overwatch?
Yeah, you go Overwatch. If you're getting bored of those, I would say, hey, if you haven't played this one in a while or ever, give it a shot. The mechanics on it are pretty solid, a lot of fun. There you go. Adam.
Yes.
What?
Will thematically tie in just by pure coincidence.
I don't know why it is completely unplanned.
I didn't think about this at all. So The Last Jedi, Star Wars The Last Jedi, is on the Netflix streaming. I know. I rewatched it for what would be the fifth time, I believe.
Did it ruin your childhood?
Yes. No. And this is what I'm going to say. It is hands down at this point at least my second favorite Star Wars movie ever, if not the first.
Behind?
I love Empire.
Okay.
And I mean, there is so much going on and that is so interesting in that film to me. And I think the character work is excellent. And I'm not saying this to piss anybody off. So if you didn't like the movie, I want to preface this by saying, that's cool. I'm down with everybody liking and not liking what they did and didn't. But for me personally, I think it's just a really well done film. And even things like, you know, Admiral Holdo's introduction is and Laura Dern's performance in that moment, these little things that I didn't necessarily, I mean, it's a 30-second scene, you know, of her making her little speech, and you know, so it's not something you really hone in on when you're watching a movie for the first time, but on the fifth time, these are the little details that start to come out, and just, I love it. I think it's just such a well-done movie overall, even for a Star Wars, not to say just for a Star Wars movie, I think it's a really well-done piece of cinema. The end.
Well, that's too bad, Adam.
Because I'm wrong, and
because you're wrong,
that's
and that movie
you
is
hear it's getting remade?
I have heard that.
So, Jordan, we ran a story this week regarding a particular director.
Yes.
Would you introduce the story?
Yeah. So, Christopher McQuarrie, who is on Twitter, especially now a lot because he has Mission Impossible, whatever the new one is called, coming out.
Fallout,
right. Mission Impossible Fallout. It's basically just video game titles now. But he's tweeting a lot. And Rian Johnson said on Twitter, if you want to know about filmmaking, you want to learn some tips, then follow Christopher McQuarrie, who is a renowned screenwriter, a great director. He's been in the business for a long time, last 20-something years. And Rian Johnson has a bit of a... We love him. He directed The Last Jedi. He has a bit of a, how should we say, harsh Twitter following. A lot of people are not super fans of The Last Jedi, and they make it known on Twitter.
Yes, and he is somewhat adversarial, let us say.
At this point, he doesn't really care. I think at this point, he's so over people deluging him with hate, even though he's such a positive Twitter
person. He is
trolled,
and he does troll back at him. He absolutely does.
But defensively, because at this point,
he's bad for doing it. I'm just acknowledging that he does do it.
I mean, called defending yourself against like a constant barrage of abuse trolling.
I think he's
back?
Also defending.
I wouldn't call that trolling back. I would call that responding.
I would also
to,
say he's defending the many people of color and the women and all the people who've been attacked for liking this movie. Not that they need his defense, but I think as the filmmaker, he feels an obligation to. Anyways, so he brings with him a lot of Twitter baggage, and people just started inundating Christopher McQuarrie with, I should say, negative tweets.
Because he happened to be talking about Ron Serling, wasn't he?
Yes. He said something.
So Serling, he was like, oh yeah, like he made a lot of really progressive stuff with Twilight Zone. He told a lot of progressive stories.
Yeah, at some point someone said, like, I really, really wish people would just take politics out of sci-fi, like Ron Serling did Twilight Zone. And they were like,
What?
Lol.
Yeah.
Lol, what?
And so that turned into a whole thing. And at some point, McQuarrie was like, honestly, it would have been a dream for me to make a Star Wars movie, but I don't know how Rian Johnson deals with five minutes.
Yeah, he was like, I've been cured.
And so basically, not that Christopher McQuarrie was ever in conversations to make a Star Wars movie. There's going to be a trilogy that Johnson's doing, and the Game of Thrones guys are doing stuff, and Jon Favreau's doing a TV series, I think. So it's not like Christopher McQuarrie, as far as we know, was in talks with Lucasfilm, but he preemptively took himself out of the running due to the people trolling his Twitter.
And he's not the only one who has been in that position. Ava DuVernay also said she would never work in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, they're chasing away really good filmmakers. And look, there's a lot of great filmmakers that I'm sure would be willing to deal with it. But when you're just chasing away talent preemptively, because a small minority of fans, let's be honest, like there's a lot of great Star Wars fans. There's a lot of people who love The Last Jedi. It made over $1 billion. But a small minority, very vocal minority of fans are chasing away not only great filmmakers, but, you know, good people from working on the franchise.
And that was the other big story that came out this week was Ahmed Best talking about what the reaction to Jar Jar did to him as a person and an actor following, you know, the prequels. And I think he said he was like driven to the point of considering suicide over it, which is just something you love to hear in a fandom that's supposed to be, you know,
and what's
a
interesting,
positive thing.
You know, what's interesting is that we talk about The Last Jedi, the backlash, as if it's kind of a new thing, but clearly Ahmed Best went through this in 1999 or so. It's not. Someone had just tweeted a letter to the editor in a newspaper saying it was in 1995, someone freaking out that George Lucas hasn't come up with Star Wars movies yet. And, you know, he talked about doing prequels or something like that throughout the 90s. And they said that he needs to make a public apology. And this was, you know, 1995, I guess, a few years before word about the prequels broke out.
That's wild. Yeah, I mean, like, this is the thing, is like, none of it's new. And, like, the prequel stuff, it was like, yeah, like, they, like, Jake Lloyd was like, I'll never act again. And, you know, they, like, it, like, this is what's sort of interesting, right? Like, yes, we can acknowledge that with The Last Jedi, there is a gender and race component to what's happening. But, like, even before this, there was an issue, right? Like, and even now, like, there are things that come up, like, none of the extended universe stuff counts. And was it racism that caused these people to get so fired up, or was just that they felt they had dedicated something and so it was important? Now that it didn't count, they just panicked and had a panic attack and screamed and screamed and screamed and are still screaming.
I think it's people feeling as if something's being taken from them. You know, they've devoted so much of their lives to Star Wars, and I think that if they are, so not everyone who's freaking out is racist, they're just also just kind of nuts, but not nuts, very devoted and too much so. But I think then it activates when they see not only something being quote-unquote taken from them, but a role being given to a woman or having a lead as a person of color, if they are sort of latently or, you know, maybe a little bit racist or sexist, right, that brings it out. I think
it's just the weirdness of going after specific people, which feels very unnecessary.
But remember that even when the prequels came out, there was no social media. I mean, that's the big difference.
Yes, that is the change.
These quote-unquote movements gain traction and attention so much faster because it's just disseminated instantly, as opposed to even in the 90s. I mean, in the late 90s and early 2000s, we had the internet, so it's not like people weren't talking about Star Wars on the internet when the prequels were out, but there was no Twitter, there was no, you know, Facebook.
It was, I was gonna say Napster didn't even exist yet.
Yeah, so, like, you know, I mean, that to me is the biggest difference now. And it's like, I'm sure, you know, George Lucas got heaped with abuse after the prequels came out, and but it wasn't, there wasn't a pipe spewing it into his house every single day. Whereas if you're Rian Johnson on Twitter or Chris McCrory on Twitter or whoever, that's what it basically is. You've got this hose just blasting at you all day of all this information. And it's, you know, apparently it would seem that it's a lot harder to ignore.
You know, there were websites in the 90s. But when Batman and Robin came out, you know, there were websites that were like, I want to kill Joel Schumacher.com. The difference was that there was no way to put this stuff, you know, show this stuff to the people that they wanted to murder. You know, like Joel Schumacher just not go to I want to kill Joel Schumacher.com, and then he wouldn't have to deal with it. But this stuff is in the faces of the people who are involved nonstop. And then there's also people like, look, it's not our fault that people are insane, but it makes for a juicy story.
But even the response to, I mean, that's the good point too, is like, if I was Rian Johnson and I'm not following the remake Star Wars thing, someone's going to respond to the remake Star Wars thing on Twitter, even if they're saying this is a bad idea and I think it's dumb and we shouldn't do it. And you're going to see that. Like, there's basically...
They're going to include you in the conversation.
Yeah, there's just no avoiding it, even for people who aren't... Like, I'm not even involved in Star Wars other than being a fan.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think there's a whole... This is like a culture thing, right? Where it's like, you're dealing with a tool that we have not... Even, like, the people that really understand it haven't permanently and perfectly mastered it. So the people that already were like, society, who cares? I'll do what I want. Like, I don't really understand it. They don't understand me, so I'll just break the rules anyway. Like, this is like another layer. It's a mess because, like, these, like you said, like, yeah, like people would literally be like, oh, the internet, I can make a Joel Schumacher must die.com thing. And it's like, you know, do I like Batman and Robin? No, not particularly. But like, there was a great Robot Chicken joke about that, where like they have like their little nerd character, and he goes, "Joel Schumacher, history's greatest monster," and it's like, it's funny because that movie is not good, and like I hate it, and a lot of people do, but also it's insane to a quote like to be like he's like the Goebbels of movie making. It's like, no, he's not.
Well, the internet back then, when Joel Schumacher was getting those sites written about him, it was like, I don't know if you, Dave Chappelle used to do it, if the internet was a place, you know, and I think of it as like, if you think of it as a hotel, there's individual rooms and closets that were like, IHateJoelSchumacher.com. But now everyone's in the lobby and just screaming. And
yeah,
so no
I was
matter
gonna
what
say,
you do,
it's like way too open concept.
Yeah. So no matter what you do, if you're in the lobby, you're going to hear someone's, even like a toddler screaming, you're going to hear it. And that's what we're dealing with.
Well, and the other thing, too, I mean, honestly, like, I'm surprised it took this for, like, it. If I was a director who, I mean, obviously you want to make a living, so there's that aspect of it, but I've been saying for a while that I'm surprised more directors aren't like checking out of the franchise model, whether it's Star Wars or Marvel or whatever, you know?
This is great. You know what? Maybe this is going to be the thing. It's going to be like a blessing in disguise. We're going to finally stop remaking things, and then like people will make new stories because they'll be so tired of feeling like every time you make something in an existing franchise or remaking an idea, you're going to get screamed at, and people are going to say it's not worth it anymore.
I don't think that's going to happen. I'm just being hopeful.
On the other hand, before I saw Ant-Man and the Wasp last night, there was a trailer for a Nutcracker movie that's like an action fantasy epic. I know.
It does. I'm ready.
But it's like,
Disney's about to enter a really weird time.
Yeah, who was like calling out, well, you know what we need to do is take this classic ballet
but make it badass
and make it edgy and dark.
I'm ready for it.
It's so weird.
Really, I'm still kind of here for it though.
Yeah, I'm ready to give
but
it
this
a
is
shot.
Not, so yeah, see, so kind of you say it. You don't want to see remakes, but look at you.
But the thing is, like, is that, I don't know, that's like such a, it's such a completely different riff on that idea.
Well, you know what's interesting is, so Chris McQuarrie, I liked his term, I'm cured of it, because I think a lot of people, and we're seeing it, people grew up loving Star Wars and Star Trek and wanting to play in those universes, and that's why, you know, J.J. Abrams went and made those things. That's why Ryan Johnson signed on. That's why Colin Trevorrow briefly was doing Star Wars. And I think that once that allure is gone to this generation of filmmakers, then I don't think we're not going to get those movies anymore. I think big corporations are going to make these big franchises, but it may be that all the talent is not going to go to those big things. Otherwise, or it could be that they use that as a springboard to make their own small passion projects more instead of staying with a franchise for four movies.
Or it's just something else. I mean, that's the thing, that you're going to have a generation of filmmakers who grew up with the MCU. You know, like there are people who were kids when that is out, who are in like college or graduating college now. And it's just like, so that's their Star Wars, you know what I mean? So that's going to be the thing that people are drawn to rather than, you know, the era of Star Wars being this thing that was universally loved was 40 years ago. My God. So, you know, there's not going to be a generation of filmmakers who are like, yes, Star Wars, I must be a part of it, you know? Because it wasn't right. The seminal part of their youth.
I think the best thing that Disney has done, incidentally, is to take away this holy sheen from Star Wars. We have movies coming out every year, and there's lots of TV shows, and they're going to make a TV show live action for the Disney streaming network. And I really like Star Wars. You know, I grew up loving it, and I will see the movies and watch the TV shows, but I don't see it as like a holy text, especially when you can go recast Han Solo, you know, and whether or not that movie succeeds in what it meant, went out to do, it kind of takes it off the pedestal. I think it makes it a thing that we can enjoy in pop culture without treating like a holy text.
I mean, the irony is that's kind of what the expanded universe did for a long time. I mean, they went nuts in there. Yeah. There was all kinds of crazy stuff going on there that people,
yeah, it was all bets are off really in that expanded universe.
It was bonkers. Like, I remember reading some of those books and just being like, what is going on in this universe?
Yeah, like there were no rules. It was just kind of like, you know, there was no sacred Star Wars, like, guideposts that you had to stay between. They just kind of made stuff up as they went, and you know, for better or worse. But it's just interesting because when they cut that loose, it was back to this idea of, you know, sacred Star Wars. Sure. Everything must be in accordance with the originals and blah, 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 blah. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if the effect that we're going to see is more akin to what we saw out of the EU with all this what's the word I'm looking for?
Maybe it'll become like Star
Trek. Proliferation of Star Wars media.
Maybe it'll become like Star Trek, where like there's a TV series every bunch of years and some movies sometimes, and people who love it can find different things within it to focus on.
Yeah, that would be great.
I mean, like, I'm as a Star Trek person, I feel like that thing, that franchise, already doesn't have the sheen on it that it once did. Like,
well, that's what I'm saying.
But like, yeah, like, so when I look at it, like, is there a... It's weird. I almost feel like what this boils down to is something philosophical and psychological, right? Where it's like you want people to feel that passion that you do. You want to see kids watch whatever Star Wars, Star Trek, and feel that kid feeling that you feel. And also, like, you know, like you want to be able to go, like, these guys will go, or these people will go and watch a Star Wars movie, and they want to have that feeling they had when they were a child, and they don't have it anymore. And it sort of reminds you of your own mortality, like, oh no, like, I'm going to be dead someday, and like, there's going to be people generations from now that won't even know, like, this thing, the Star Wars thing will be meaningless to them. It'll just be words. What's a Star Wars? Like, does it, you know? And that's, like, deeply upsetting, I think. If you think about it in that way, this thing that matters so much to you could become so completely irrelevant is kind of, in a way, scary.
I think what it comes,
if you let it be.
Sure. I think for me, I've never, in a way, understood, and maybe it's because I grew up also a sports fan, so the owner of the thing is very clear, and it's just there's so much money involved that, you know, you could only be a spectator. I've never felt real ownership of a thing like that, of a Star Wars, of a Marvel, whatever the thing I loved. Like, I grew up loving Spider-Man, but if they wanted to make Ben Reilly Spider-Man for a while, I was along for the ride because it wasn't mine. And so I understand, in a sense, you devoted your life to a thing, so you want it to continue to be, you know, glorious and for people to love it. But I've never quite identified in a way that I feel invested in something else's success.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I would be real blue if I had a kid and the kid didn't like Star Trek. But I'd get over
it. It's gonna happen. You know it.
I mean, well, I'm not having any kids, but like, you're gonna, if I did,
you're gonna find a kid.
My mom introduced me to Star Trek, but she's not the kind of fan I am.
Yeah,
I'm a convention going, dressing up, watch party, and she'll just watch TNG when it comes on.
It's like my dad in the Mets.
Yeah, but I got into Star Trek because of mom, because they were re-showing original series, and she was like, "Oh, I remember watching this when I was a kid," and we'd watch it when we were eating dinner, and it was blowing my brain because I fell in love with Kirk and Spock and the entire crew and the aesthetics of the 60s show, and that got me in. And because that got me in, when 2009 movie came around, like, there were a bunch of grown-ass women. I got into Star Trek because of Chris Pine's baby blue eyes, and they all watched the show because I introduced them to it because of the gateway drug of the movie.
Yeah, and those things are great, and it's like, I don't know, it's like, if that happens, it's great, and if it doesn't happen, oh well. So, like, this is the thing, is it's like, I don't know.
So what if they make a bad Star Trek movie?
What's up?
What if they make a bad Star Trek movie? Will you care? Will you be offended?
They've been making them for a really long time.
Sure.
Well,
every other one.
So we have these, like, so they did make two good ones, and then I heard there was this, like, middle one. I still haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, there
the
you
Cumberbatch
go.
One?
I have not seen
never
that
heard
one
of it.
Yet.
Never heard
I'm
of
never
it.
Gonna
I'm
see it. It's just I know myself, but the thing is, I still have Star Trek Beyond now, and I have the original series.
Sure.
And I have the one with the whales. I am set.
Yeah, Star Trek the one with the whales is a classic. But yeah, I mean, like, this is the thing, right? Of course, I want Star Trek and Star Wars to exist in perpetuity for all time. But the reality is that Star Wars one day will be dust, and I will be dust. And you have to just accept that that's okay. And I do think that in a way, that is really what we're getting down to. If you cast everything else aside, if you cast all the other things that get in the stew of this, the thing that originally creates this stress, this panic, this drama, is just that, like, Star Wars is not actually, like, someday it will be gone and someday you will be gone and you have to be okay with it.
Just be okay.
And I think that there is that element of chasing the dragon that was you were talking about earlier, like, of this feeling you have when you're a kid and you experience something like a Star Wars or Star Trek the original series or whatever for the first time, and it blows your mind out your butt. And that's great, you know, and that's that. You're very at that age, you know. It's interesting because we've kind of taken this idea of geekdom and fandom and being a super, you know, talking about this almost childlike embrace of these things and love of these things. And but the expectation is that we're going to feel that way now as 40 something year old person that I am. Like, I'm I you have to understand that it's never going to be that way again. And that's sad. You know, that's what the loss of childhood innocence is and growing up and all this stuff. And it doesn't mean you have to grow up in the sense of, well, be stodgy and start wearing a suit and tie every day. But like, you're just never going to have that experience you had as a kid. Or like hearing that band, it totally changes your perspective on things for the first time when you hear their album. You know, these are things that are harder to come by as you become an adult. And I think that a lot of people are expecting to be able to have that experience again. And it's you just can't.
Well, adulthood.
Even like, listen, there are great movies out there that have blown my mind. And like, I love them. But it's not that same feeling of discovering Star Wars for the first time I had when I was like two.
And,
you know, it's just never going to be. And that's okay. Like, that's not a bad thing. It's just that's going to be the way it is. And you can't chase that dragon forever.
I also think that adulthood is pretty terrible. And so people want that to get that feeling back they had when they were a kid. But I also think that it's okay to like things in a different way and grow with it, too. You know, I don't like when I grew up watching baseball, I was obsessed with it and idealized the players. Then I went and worked for a minor league baseball team and then for the Mets for a little while. And I learned a lot of them are scumbags and it's a money game. And I can appreciate the game.
I wish you would tell me how you really feel.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they were very nice to me. I had the time of my life. I'm in high school in a minor league clubhouse. But, you know, you look back and you're like, wow, a lot of these guys were kind of scummy or they're not making a lot of money, whatever it was. And that's fine. I can appreciate baseball in a different way. I can appreciate the business of it. I can appreciate what it takes to get to that point, the sacrifices these players make. So, no, I don't go to now Citi Field and say, oh, my God, it's like a cathedral of baseball. I mean, the Mets are terrible, which helps. But I can appreciate the game in a different way, and I can appreciate Star Wars in a different way. I can marvel at, oh, my God, this was so creative. This was such an incredible shot. The special effects, which I didn't know how they were done when I was a kid, that's amazing that they did that. So I think it's okay to grow up with a thing and like it in a different way. And I don't think the people who are flipping out about these things are doing that.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, I don't know, like, we find that feeling to a degree, I feel,
no,
in,
to a
in
degree.
Other things.
Absolutely.
And, like, I didn't, you know, like, when I watched The Last Jedi, I had a couple moments. And I'm lucky, I suppose, in a way that I still felt that kind of wonder in spots. But I find that I don't get it as much. You know, when I watched Star Trek Discovery, I liked Star Trek Discovery, but it didn't give me that feeling that I felt when I was a kid. But I do find it often in brand new things and often in unexpected places.
Yes, sure.
And, you know, like, I actually, weirdly, I would say, in a way, I felt it while I was watching Glow, because Glow is from a time period in which I grew up, and I felt such a wonder about, like, these things that these women were accomplishing, that they were growing out of their circumstances. And, like, I don't know, I, like, cried that, like, through many episodes. And, like, I don't know, like, that the way that I get that feeling or something that is sort of tangential to that feeling, it comes from completely unexpected places now. And that's not only is that okay, I think that's great.
Right.
That's like a nice thing to feel like I don't know where it's going to show up.
And I think that's part of it, too, is that anytime you walk into anything, I think, expecting it to deliver a certain level of that feeling that we're talking about, you're setting yourself up for disappointment. It comes, I think, most, like you said, in moments of surprise or moments when you, like, Stranger Things was that for a lot of people, because not a lot of people knew about it before it came out. And then it came out and everybody's like, holy crap, this thing is great. And, you know, that is when you're most likely to find it, I think. And I think everybody's going into these Star Wars movies demanding almost in an expectation level that they get that hit of whatever it is.
I'm almost surprised it still happens. Like, that's the thing that sort of blows my mind, is like, what is the mean age, I wonder, right? Because, like, I already learned this lesson from the prequels. I did not like them, and it cured me of an expectation on Star Wars. So when a Star Wars movie, like, really satisfies me, like, I don't want to be mean, but I am a little surprised.
Well, a whole generation of kids grew up loving Clone Wars and Rebels, and that's their way into it. And so they'll see The Last Jedi and be like, well, that's really cool. But if they have a character like Ezra or whatever shows up in a movie, then their minds are going to be blown. So I think that we're looking at people when they have this backlash. They're not kids. I mean, some of them might be teenagers, but they're people in their 30s and 40s generally.
I'm just surprised by that. Like, that's the thing that I look at and I go, but, like, guys, we all watched those prequel movies, remember? And, like, most of us were really, really deeply disappointed in them and felt like we could never look at Star Wars the same way again. I mean, that's, to this day, like, I'm not trying to be mean to anybody, but, like, I hated those movies. like, and still deeply hate them. Like, but that's a personal problem, and right. I know that it is. But it, but the upshot of it was, I would never have the expectation in a new Star Wars thing that it would be so potent, that it would have such a strong connection to me. So that when it does happen, when I do get those moments in a Star Wars movie, it's a surprise, and it's great. Just let yourself be surprised by a thing. Don't go in with a... with an expectation. I don't know, like, it's weird. It's weird to have expectations for Star Wars at this point.
I was in Disney World this past weekend, as I mentioned, and I didn't go much as a kid. I went once or twice. But, you know, when you go to Disney World as a kid, your mind is often just blown. You know, you're like, oh my God, this place is magical. I've been back a few times just for work, but when I go now, I can appreciate it in a different way. And I can say, oh, wow, the craftsmanship of this place is unreal. The way they create, like we were saying before the show, this Disney bubble where everything is tuned out except for Disney stuff is amazing. When I see a kid there who's having the time of their life meeting Mickey Mouse or whomever, I can be like, that's awesome. That kid is enjoying it so much. But there, then there are people who they move to Orlando or Anaheim and they get so mad when anything has changed. They will protest when they remove an old, dinky, probably kind of racist ride to like replace it with something really awesome and cool. And those are, it's kind of the same thing where you either grow up with it and find a new way to appreciate it, or you want this little feeling, this feeling you had as a kid to continue to blow your mind.
Well, and here's the other thing is that if, say you loved Disneyland as a kid and then you went as an adult and you're like, wow, this experience really doesn't do it for me, that's okay.
Sure.
Like yeah. There's no, like, but it doesn't mean that Disneyland should be torn down.
Or that, you know, that, like, that validates your childhood.
That, yeah, or that your childhood memories weren't wonderful. I mean, that's kind of the basic thing is like, I don't know that I would have a great time at Disney right now, and but I'm not going to sit here and say, well, all, let's get rid of it or remake it in my image so that I would have a great time, so that all these other people can't have the experience I had when I was younger and enjoyed it. I like that to me is the sentiment that I don't get. It's like, listen, if you don't like Star Wars now because of the way it's gone and the direction Kathleen Kennedy's taking it, like that is fine. That is your call. That is a personal preference, but like to turn it into a movement to save something that never really needed saving in the first place. I don't know. That's the part where I'm just like, you know, just it's okay.
Yeah, you're trying
there's, as we said, we were talking about this before the show, there is so much media out there, especially in sci-fi now. If you don't like Star Wars anymore, there's a million other things to watch, and they'll all, one of them has to do something for you, you know, somehow. So
it's out there. Just go find it.
Yeah, just go look under a different rock.
Anyway, we should. Like, move. We've it. Talked about.
We have.
Star
we have.
Wars
all right. So from like this really big idea to maybe something a little bit smaller.
Hey, there you go.
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Oh, that was a transition.
Yeah, that was it.
Small because they get small
right,
in the movie.
Right.
Don't be slick. We were having such a good. There wasn't like, you know, Adam doesn't like when we're mean, so we're not allowed to be mean to each other.
We're supposed to be really nice to each other.
Okay.
Self-deprecating.
If you say so.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, so Ant-Man and the Wasp came out, and it is sort of this this follow-up film to Avengers: Infinity War, which is kind of weird. Which is about as big as a Marvel movie has ever been, and now we are at this thing that is, I think, both in the literal sense that it's about shrinking, it's small, but also it's a smaller story. It's not about the world ending. It's about something a little more personal. So, Adam, what did you think of it?
I liked it. That's as far as I liked it. It was fun. It had a lot of fun moments. I thought the cast had some great chemistry. I think it solved the Marvel villain problem by not really having one, which was interesting. But because everybody in the movie is at the end of the day, not really a bad person. But
except that one guy.
Except that one guy. You're right. That one guy. Yeah. But
He's great.
You know, it's funny. It's got a lot of great gags. But it's not a. I don't know. I didn't walk out of there like, yeah.
Where are we on spoilers? Can we spoil or not?
Not yet. We're going to talk non-spoiler.
We're
going to
do
a
general feeling. We're going to talk about your fifis, and then we'll get to spoilers.
Oh, my fifis. Okay.
Yes. Please tell me about your fifis.
That was the end of my fifis.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's. You know, I thought Infinity War was good. I thought it was a lot. And for a movie like this, it made me think about Deadpool a little bit, which is so meta. And it's basically Deadpool 2 is a movie about superhero movies that's really on the nose in a way. And I thought Ant-Man did a great job of lightening the tone a lot without being really glib. And I like Deadpool 2, but I think that it was a little bit much, you know, constantly breaking the fourth wall. I thought Ant-Man 2, or Ant-Man and the Wasp, I should say, did a great job of not taking itself too seriously without making fun of the entire genre. I liked a lot when Paul Rudd, Scott Lang, as his name in the movie, he had no idea what was going on. And there was so much advanced fake science, I imagine, probably a mix of fake and real. And a lot of times in movies, you're sitting in the audience like, I have no idea what they're saying. And he was the guy saying, oh, yeah, that's what I was going to. He was like, oh, I have no idea what's going on. And he would make a lot of jokes like that. Like, you guys just did quantum in front of everything. And I really appreciated him just being as clueless as me. And I think that did a really good job just sort of bringing in a human element. And I liked a lot of the digressions there when they were arguing over the desk size while they're coming up with their big plan, or they're arguing over whether something is truth serum or not. And I'm not going to spoil anything more, but I really appreciated the movie for not taking itself too seriously. And it was a nice palate cleanser after Infinity War, when I think we can spoil Infinity War now. Half the universe disappears.
Oh my God, spoilers.
Yeah. So I think that not only was it a fun movie, I think it was needed after Infinity War. It kind of got me back in the groove of Marvel movies.
I absolutely agree with you. I think it was the palate cleanser we desperately needed as a country, as a nation, especially after we were all hurt so, so bad by Thanos.
I know.
And even though, like, well, we'll get into it in spoilers. I walked out of the theater delighted. Mm-hmm. I came to the Ant-Man movie late in the Marvel movie game. Okay. I just missed it in the theater. I didn't really have interest in it. And when I finally went back and watched it, I was like, oh, no one told me it was the heist movie I wanted. Mm-hmm. And so this sort of continues in that fashion. And that makes it a lot more human in the superhero universe, which I'll always appreciate.
Yes.
So it definitely made for a very fun night.
Yeah, I care about one life more than I care about the universe, the half of the universe lives.
Right.
That makes sense.
Danny, what'd you think?
It's so weird, the Ant-Man franchise, as it is, because it has managed to escape the black hole that was the bad press of Edgar Wright.
Right.
In the original movie, because that's the thing, like, that is the greatest achievement of the film, is that I don't think about that at all anymore unless I force myself to.
Imagine forcing yourself to.
I'm like, well, it's my
turn. Think about Edgar Wright.
That's what I do. That's what I do. And I'm like, and I slap myself on the hand. And anyway, that's for a completely different podcast called Safe Word. Anyway.
The Fandom Files.
Yes, The Fandom Files. It's about the fandom. Yes. Anyway, so I liked this movie because, yeah, it just makes you forget everything. You could just forget about everything for a little while. It's just 2 hours of forgetfulness. And yeah, I mean, like, is it exceptional? It is like the most Marvel movie, that single serving friend. You go and you enjoy it. And then what happened? Just like it made me forget about the world's woes. Like, if I watch it again in a year, I'm going to not remember most of what happened, to be honest.
And you don't need to remember really what happens going into it either. You know, there's a lot of people in the audience. I know
they explain it. They explain things.
But that's all you need. You don't need to have watched 14, 15, right. 18 movies going into it. I will say this.
What's interesting is that, yeah, there's all this stuff that they do explain, and they're able to explain it in a sentence or two. And yet, one of my criticisms of the film is that the villain, so far as a villain exists, the movie comes to like a grinding halt when they explain what the deal is with the villain.
Yeah,
and there's literally a whole joke sequence wherein they're explaining a really long thing, and it's hilarious, and it's done so well. So like, it can be done. There are ways to explain things. It's just like. That was the first thing that really jumped at me, is that was a problem. So you say they avoided the villain thing, but I am not sure that I agree, because I do still think there's problems with the quote.
Well, that's what I'm almost saying. She's not really a villain in the Ghost. You know, they've been set up as Ghost is the antagonist. We've seen her in the trailers. It's not Hannah John Kamen is playing her, and who I think is great, and I want to see her in everything forever. But. It's just that, you know, it's like she's never really, it's not, unlike a lot of these other movies, there's always some mustache twirling person who's like, I want to do this for, because I'm greedy and this is for my own personal gain and mwahaha. And there's not that in this film. And well, that's why I say there's not.
But
really
there though. Kind of is, which I guess we're going into spoiler, because it's, if you set up Ghost as a villain, not villain, you still, they still give you someone at the end when they're caught. You're like, yay, good
yeah,
for,
no, that's
good
true.
For, yay. But it that those people still don't matter.
Right.
I'd have been fine without any villain. Like, it's a series of accidents and things that were happening that...
The FBI could have been villain.
Yeah, I would have been fine with them just chasing after, you know, the thing they were going after without having a villain trying to purposely gum up the works.
And here's my thing. I think every Marvel movie from now on, they should bring Michael Peña to the set for a day and just do, like, a Luis relating the story of that movie.
Yeah.
And have it be an extra on the Blu-ray and something that they do to catch people up. Because that, it, to me, that is my favorite, like, trope from the Ant-Man movies so far, is him telling a story and other people acting it out. It cracks me up every time, and they double down on it here in some ways.
Well,
that's
what should happen. They should do that as a marketing strategy,
yeah.
Where they write that up and they have Michael Peña do it
with
and
the then, actors like, on set as they're
so
shooting.
It's like,
the film.
All right, so when they release the next Avengers movie, Marvel should release, in addition to a trailer, they should also release a Michael Peña thing where Luis is just explaining everything you need to know.
Right. The entire Marvel Cinematic Universe story up to that point with all the actors doing the parts.
I want that so badly now. I think I'm going to cry.
He's great in this movie and gets a lot more to do than the last movie.
I like
as
that
well.
He's running the company.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Who's your favorite character from this thing? Who was the one that really jumped at you?
I mean, I loved the Wasp. I thought it was great. She got to do a lot more than...
You like that Hope Van Dyne?
I do like that Hope Van Dyne. I've always been an Evangeline Lilly fan, so it's great to see her get a lead role.
Who was your favorite character, Jordan?
I liked everyone at that security company, Luis and the other two guys. I think that they were a lot of fun, and I also...
You know them so well.
I can't remember
their
that.
Names. I don't
know. I know T.I.,
yeah.
And then there's the other guy. But his little... When Ghost shows up, and he's like... Baba Yaga.
Yeah.
That was like the funniest thing in the whole movie for me almost.
I also really enjoyed the Morrissey stuff because Mexicans do love Morrissey. He was huge.
Wait,
when
is
he
that,
was to
I
LA.
Didn't know that.
No, yeah, that's a real thing. It was on Orange is the New Black as well. There's a whole Mexican fandom
so many
of Morrissey.
That I don't know in this life.
After the Smiths broke up, he moved to LA and it was like a revolution. Not revolution, something. They love him.
Yeah.
Mexicans love Morrissey.
Yeah, it's true.
Too bad about Morrissey, then.
I know.
Too bad about that whole Morrissey being Morrissey thing.
Yeah, him being
that's
insane.
A shame.
Yeah. I guess you should have seen that coming, right?
Yeah. Anyway, meet his murder, et cetera. You would say that those three
guys.
Characters are your favorites.
Every time they're on screen, I laugh, so that helps.
Yeah.
There you go. Was there somebody that sort of stands out to you?
I mean, yeah, that whole team was just... As soon as they break out the truth serum, I'm like, here it comes, here it comes. And then that whole beautiful long digression happens, and I was howling with laughter. And I'd forgotten what that feels like in a Marvel movie. But, I mean, the Ant-Man's strength is its side characters, absolutely. Even down to, like, I mean, you could say the daughter is sugary sweet, but, like, I like her a lot.
Yeah.
I love his ex and her current husband. I love how into Scott they all both are. Like, the whole family is like, yay!
Yeah, it's a nice evolution from the first movie, right? Because Bobby Cannavale does not like him in the first film.
Right.
Now he loves him.
And now he loves him, which is like not a huge spoiler because they set that out as a fact pretty much like within the first 5 minutes of this sequel.
I also love, even in this moment that could be super dramatic, you know, where I guess we're in spoilers now.
No. No spoilers yet.
Well, okay, then I will hold this off. I will hold it off.
But Danny, who was your favorite character?
Gosh, it's a toss-up for me. I did like Cassie a lot, Scott Lang's daughter. I think that what they give her is really good, and I kept finding myself thinking, like, man, so, like, is she going to be, like, is she going to get powers at some point? Can they do, like a G-rated Marvel movie starring her? Like, that'd be great, you know? Or, like, I don't, whatever. It just made me realize that it's time to do, like, a Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur or something like that. But, like, we're way past due on letting there be a big budget Marvel movie with a kid protagonist, because I really do think you could do it.
Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
Hey, listen, I've seen worse movies. I actually don't hate Sharkboy and Lava Girl if you want to get down to brass tacks.
I saw it at a drive-in theater in Pittsburgh.
Not a bad film. Not a bad film at all. But, you know, I really liked her, and I, strangely, even though she's somewhat spoilers, is not in it much, I do like Janet Van Dyne.
Yeah.
I like her. I mean, I love Michelle Pfeiffer, so, like...
I gotta say, you know what was the craziest thing in this movie? There is so much digital de-aging happening in this film.
And
I was thinking back to... what was the first one they did? It was one of the it was The Last Stand, right? Where they de-aged.
Patrick Stewart. Do I remember that?
And boy, did that look weird and awkward and creepy. You know, and we have come a really long way.
My brain keeps going back to Tron Legacy and what they did with Jeff
Bridges.
Oh,
yeah.
That's horrifying.
Even the first Michael Douglas in Ant-Man, it looked weird.
I thought that one was actually pretty solid. But
it was
very.
There was a twinge there, but yeah.
I mean, I could still see it.
Legacy.
I don't know. I can't. Here's the question. I mean, I know it looks better, but isn't it a mixture of things? Isn't it A, they've gotten better at it, and B, we've gotten used
more
to
accepting
it?
Of it? Yeah, totally. And there were still moments where I was just kind of like. I think Lawrence Fishburne looked the best of the three of them. Michelle Pfeiffer was the hardest one. Just because. I don't know why, but it was just kind of like there were moments where it was just kind of like, whoa, there's some uncanny valley stuff happening.
I think
they
aged her up.
What's that?
Michelle Pfeiffer. It felt like they aged her up, no?
Oh, I don't know.
No, I thought that what the issue with her was, I think the age they were trying to achieve was an age in which she was not making a ton of movies.
Right.
Right.
And so you didn't have any point of comparison. So like you were like, it looks wrong. But
we also haven't seen much of her lately. So it's just strange. Like in my mind, she's like, Catwoman. I know she made a lot of stuff since then, but...
Yes, but nothing that has been as big as
that. Sure. Right, sure. And so, like, that's an indictment of Hollywood in a lot of ways.
Yes, it is.
So, but beyond that, when I first saw her, I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, now, do you
spoiler
think we
time?
Have... Yes, I think we've earned it.
I also just, finally, before we get to spoilers, I do want to shout out, again, Hannah John Kamen, because I thought she was great as Ghost, and did to Danny's point, had a very difficult moment in the movie of having to basically explain her entire character in a monologue. Which is, you know, one of the, I think that's not, wasn't necessarily the best script writing thing because it's like a lot of telling, not showing.
Not a great character either.
But
there's nothing you can put on her though. Like that is not
her. No, exactly. I'm saying
it
was a very difficult lift for her to have to do. And I thought she did it really well.
Yeah. It was a pretty solid deadlift of some really, really dead language.
Yes.
Anyway. All right. So let's talk about spoilers. We made it to that point. If you have not seen the movie, just be aware. We're going to talk about the film. In obscene detail.
Can I say my spoiler thing now?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll be talking about the levity in difficult situations when, Janet speaks through Scott and Paul Rudd is holding hands with Evangeline Lilly and Michael Douglas, and it's supposed to be this tender moment, and it is in a way, but it's Paul Rudd delivering the lines that Michelle Pfeiffer is kind of feeding him. I thought that really punctured the seriousness without, you know, getting rid of it too much.
I wish people had laughed less. I actually feel like the laughter in my crowd went on because I think that there is a point of authorial intent where it's supposed to be funny at first, but the further into you get, the more you're supposed to acknowledge that this is still a potent scene, and people just kept laughing, and I was like, our society has a real problem with gender. It's hard for me not to think of that when they do scenes that way. I understand why it's funny for other people, but it's like a weird soft spot for me.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. I just thought maybe Paul Rudd's performance was like so sincere.
To a degree. Yeah. Oh, yes, it was very sincere.
Which is why I think that's what made me laugh about it. Not the idea of a woman speaking through a man, just his face and being so in it.
And I was glad they didn't take it to, like, I thought they were going to take it to, like, him kissing Michael Douglas or something,
which would have been a laugh moment, but
didn't need to be, you know.
I agree.
So I was glad they didn't. That's one thing, actually, I will say about this movie is that and someone else, I can't remember his name. Oh my God. And this is horrible. And I'm sorry. Internet writer out there wrote a piece about like the lack that it was like, does Marvel think kissing is icky or like romance is icky? Because
we did that. We charted all the kisses in.
Well, no,
movies.
But it's more just like, it was more about this movie specifically because like, and he pointed out that Scott and Hope, when they're talking about their off-screen relationship that they had, you know, which was is hinted at that they were romantically involved and then they split over his whole going to Germany thing, etc. They talk about how they were sleeping together at one point, but they like, we were doing like, you know,
a
Other stuff. And like these are two people in their 30s, ostensibly, or 40s, like for Paul Rudd. So like, do adults talk about sleeping together that way who have been intimate? It's just weird. It was just a weird moment of like, and not letting them have that romance that, you know, it happens almost out of the blue when she kisses him again after he's in peril, you know? And it's just like, I don't know. To me, it feels like there was a missed opportunity there to have a little more romantic zip in this movie.
The thing is, they were pitching it that way, too, is they were like, oh, yeah, it's Ant-Man and the Wasp. And, like, it's going to be Marvel's rom-com. Like, that was the conversation that was happening. And it's like, it is not that at all.
I think it's difficult because you don't want to make it just a romantic thing. Like, she's a strong character on her own. And so there's that strange balance where you don't want it to be that, you know, they're doing it for just love or that it's like romantic back and forth and that she's subordinate to that because we're rooting for him to get her back. So I think there's an element of it's a tough balance. And yeah, it was a weird line doing other stuff. It could have been a little more explicit.
Yeah.
But that is definitely difficult because you want to have her not, you know, be just there to be Paul Rudd's, you know.
I just want to know if Evangeline Lilly, like, when they were like, and then, you know, it's like a rom-com with the Ant-Man and the Wasp, if she, like, took a knife to someone's throat and was like,
oh, yeah,
one
she
more
had been through
goddamn
this
romance and I will kill someone, I swear.
That is almost certainly what happened. Yeah. You can't blame her post-Hobbit. It's like, that's kind of fair.
Which is funny because, like,
I'm just a softie. I want love. I want love and kissing
Peyton
in all
Reed,
movies.
Who I interviewed for about his career earlier this week, he loves rom-coms, he loves Howard Hawks, and he made Down with Love, which is like the ultimate pastiche of 60s.
Oh man, I haven't seen Down
movies.
With Love in a long time.
Yeah, and so it's funny that like he held off. I mean, there was like 7 screenwriters on the movie, but ultimately he's the director, so it is sort of interesting that he really pulled back on the romance stuff.
Well, ultimately he's the director, but ultimately Kevin Feige determines the tone, and there's a Marvel, you can't go outside the Marvel thing. You know, I don't know. I would have liked more kissing. That's all.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. You said it.
Yeah.
You said it.
I also like that scene in the school where he gets kind of tiny.
Yeah.
He looked like Dunstan Checks In. You know?
Wait, is it Checks In?
Checks Out?
I thought it was Dunstan Checks Out.
Well, he's not checking out. He's in the hotel.
I don't know.
All right.
Dunstan Checks Out. He's like, Dunstan doesn't care.
Which, you know, after
a certain point,
he probably didn't. But no, they do a lot of more fun stuff with the shrinking and the growing in this movie than
the salt shaker gag.
Yeah, I mean the salt shaker gag is great. The you know we all saw the Pez dispenser in the trailers, but there's a lot of that that's really fun.
It makes the fights a lot cooler because otherwise they don't have crazy powers. No one's punching people through walls. I mean, the Wasp has blasters, which they didn't trust Ant-Man with. But yeah, it's definitely the core of the fights because otherwise it'd just be people punching.
Yeah, or even it changes the car chase scene.
Yeah.
It makes it something exciting.
That was a lot of fun.
That was so much fun.
Yeah, that was really
and that's
good.
The fights are actually a lot of fun because you've got three combatants usually, Ant-Man, Wasp, and Ghost, who can't hit each other. Like nobody can land a punch at all because as soon as Ghost swings, they're shrinking. As soon as they swing, she phases. So it mixes these really creative fight scenes where when punches do land, it's more significant because there's not a million of them.
Yeah, the second they hit a punch, like they fly away.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean it's kind of interesting, right? Because once you get towards the end of the film, you're dealing with you've got. Ant-Man and the Wasp, and they are fighting three different sets of foes.
Yes.
Right? Because you've got the feds coming after them, you've got stupid, scuzzy gangsters, and then, yes, also Ghost. And in that way, what's interesting about it is that it sort of becomes like a superhero Blues Brothers movie.
Yeah. And I want to say, I want to give props to Peyton Reed and to Marvel for not making it one of those things where we put a female villain in the movie so that the female hero has someone to fight, which...
It was not that at all.
Because that was one of the things I didn't like about Infinity War is you have that moment of, what's her name, is Proxima Midnight or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
The Night Elf from Warcraft. And it's like, we're going to have the three female heroes fight the female villain. And it's like, they can fight other people too, you know? So, like, I was really... When the movie was being made and promoted, I was like, oh, God, I wonder if that's why they did that. So that, yeah, but they didn't.
And you feel
and
bad every time.
Very well.
Every time they land a punch on Ghost, I felt kind of bad.
Yeah.
You know, she's in pain all the time, which is, you know, you rarely feel bad when a villain gets punched. So that was a nice.
Oh, yes, I agree. I actually think that was one of the things that ultimately, like, it's weird, right? It's like, what was I going to compare it to? It's like, do you remember when you used to play NBA Jam?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And then and you'd hear, ugly shot. it's good. Like, that's, that to me is what happened with Ghost, is that, like, they have to do all this weird heavy lifting the way that they script what her backstory is. It's, like, complicated and not executed well. But then, by the time you get to the end of Ghost's story, it's, like, nothing but net.
Yeah.
Like, they stick the landing, but, like, in the air, they were all over the place.
Well, no, and it's just, it's a show don't tell, or they tell don't show. It's like she basically just has to explain her backstory in a monologue, and that's hard and not, and like you said, it kind of drags the movie to a halt at that point. But I thought the way she and Lawrence Fishburne's character, who's again name I can't remember,
Bill Foster,
thank you, were handled really well. I really liked that, like, he, even while they were still doing, you know, we're going to steal the lab and we're going to do this plot to save you, he had lines he wouldn't cross. He was like, you touch his daughter, you know, all bets are off. I'm not helping you. And I thought that that made the characters much more interesting, because it was, they could still be antagonists, but not villains. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
When he comes out in the lab, and I was like, oh boy, here we go. He's the mustache twirling baddie, but he's just the guy trying to do what's right and kind of fix what maybe Michael Douglas's character messed up. And he's kind of the villain, but also helps in the end. So I don't even know that. He's like a brief antagonist.
Well, that's what I call it, antagonist, not villain, right?
They could make a TV show out of those two characters, actually. Like, I found something, there's something kind of small. Like, they're not, to me, they're not movie characters, right? Like, that was a critique for me, is that I said, these don't feel big and important enough to be in a feature film. But if you were like, okay, so, like, they survived to the end, they're imperfect people, they're not, like, Ghost is not quite cured, per se, perfectly. Things are just a little bit better. And Foster is somebody that clearly has good intentions but doesn't always get it right. And it is ostensibly like the Giles to her Buffy Summers. They could just make a TV show
out
of the two of them.
Here it is. It's the new Incredible Hulk. Because she's on the run because she's done a lot of bad things, and the feds are probably after her, right, or the police or whatever, for the things that she's done. So they have to be on the run, but they help people wherever they go. With her ghost powers, there's your show.
I would watch it.
Yeah.
I would watch that show. I don't know. They seem like TV show characters, but I don't mean that as an insult. I just think that, like, they, for what they are, seem like they would work very well in a serialized storytelling style.
And that was welcome to me, based on how big Infinity War was, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, like, that is sort of an interesting thing about it, is that that's why Ant-Man is like a cure-all, in a way. Ant-Man and the Wasp feels like a cure for...
And honestly,
what ails you after Infinity War?
And now we're getting deep into spoilers here. So, but with the, you know, the post-credit scene, I was in a way just kind of not annoyed, but kind of bummed that they bring it back to Infinity War.
I was really annoyed. Yeah,
my girlfriend turned to me and she was like, "How is it that movie is still hurting us? We're not even in that movie right now, and it's still reaching out and hurting us."
Yeah, I just like being purely isolated from that big event.
I figured that was actually going in. I knew that was going to be the scene.
I did
it's
too.
Like this. They're going to dissolve people, but I mean, it does open up some interesting things for Avengers 4 and all this stuff as regards to the quantum realm and what that's going to mean for how they fix this whole problem. Because obviously, Scott was not affected. You know, was he not affected because he's in the quantum realm, or was he just not one of the 50%? Who knows? But I think
I was surprised by the numbers. All three of them got.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that was rough.
The odds aren't.
That was it. I don't know, man. Like, yes, I too had a feeling that it was going to come down to that. And certainly once you get to the point where, like, he's going into the quantum realm and they're all three are out there and he's got to be pulled out, I was like, oh, no. Oh, no. And what really confounded me was they cut to, you know, Ash. And people in my theater started to cheer. And I was like, why are you cheering?
Why are you cheering?
What is wrong with
you? Three characters we've come to love are dead. Yay.
No, my theater, there was like an overwhelming groan of misery.
Because we've just had this 2 hours of fun and, you know,
like
picaresque adventure.
People cheered at the end of the movie. And then we got to the end of the end credits. And there was, oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Why do we have to feel this way again?
What was great also was in my theater.
They literally just got Janet Van Dyne out of the quantum blaze.
At least I know
like,
how to do it. But no, in my theater, there's a lot of people who clearly hadn't seen Infinity War. So there were so many people explaining to the person next to them. And I heard so many snaps of the finger. What happened?
That's hilarious. I love the Quantum Realm stuff, too. That's the other thing. They spend a little more time there this time with Michael Douglas going to find... I love that she's like... Is this a thing from the comics, by the way? That she has like quantum powers now?
I don't know. Because
I have to admit a lack of familiarity with the source material.
I don't know off the top of my head. Maybe.
Mm. I'm just saying Janet could have not been Ash, and then she could have put the suit on and pulled Scott out, and then they could have gone and kicked butt.
Right.
Hey, come on. Someone should have survived. It's weird that they all bit it. I was like, come on, 50%? That's not 50%.
And then
the ant had to survive. That's the thing. The ant that's playing drums.
Of Anthony stuff this time. He has just kind of disposable ants.
Yeah. He doesn't have Mark Anthony.
Banderas.
Oh, I really enjoyed
it. Only two seconds of Antonio.
And the thing, the gag where the seagulls keep eating them. Yeah. That was so dark and bleak, but funny because
they really treat ant lives really expendably. You think they'd be a little more sympathetic given the fact that they're the size of ants now.
I know.
Murderer.
I know. Yeah, it was rough, but it's anyway. A funny movie. And yeah, I mean, the more I think about it, I guess I liked it more. It's not a movie that made a deep impact starring Taya Leone on my soul and heart. You know, it was fun. It was a good time.
Say that's okay.
Deep impact. I was having
Guardians of the Galaxy 2 feelings about it.
We're
really going with the whole family, and it becomes much more personal. It's like a low key Guardians where it's not and then we gotta destroy ego.
Right.
But it's more about hey, sometimes dads are bad. And what do you do about that? And it was also Hank Pym, look at your life, look at your choices.
Yeah. Well, and that was the interesting thing, too, because at one point, Hank says that Ghost's father was stealing his technology or whatever. I don't know if I buy that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The character of Hank
is
that
a
they
bit
built,
of an unreliable narrator.
Yeah. So it's really interesting that they kind of set that up. But he's still a sympathetic character, but you also get his ego and his flaws coming through that way.
And that all that happens in the movie is because of him, really.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
it's all his fault.
I always love that.
Anyway, I learned from watching you, Dad.
That's right. Yeah.
So listen, we talked for a while about this movie, and so we're gonna wrap it. We're going to wrap
Wait,
this thing
I,
up. Okay, say your thing. Say your piece.
I need to give my Disney hot take. So,
yes.
Epcot, right? There was a pavilion there called the Body Pavilion that has been closed since 2007, and there was a ride there called Body Wars, where you get shrunk down and you enter the human body, and then the scientist researching a splinter in there gets knocked off the splinter, and then you got to go chase her, and you're chasing through the body to save her, and then you got to get a shock from the brain in order to get out of there because your engine is really low.
I never saw that.
Oh no! So it opened before Star Tours, and it's the same style of ride where you're on a ship. But when I saw the entrance to the Quantum Tunnel, I was like, "So you reopen Body Pavilion in Epcot because you're already redoing another ride for Guardians of the Galaxy, and that's the Marvel Science area where then you can go into Quantum, and the ride becomes you get shrunk down for Quantum, and you have to avoid the water." Bears and but oh no, you're going too small. How do you get pulled out? And it's shaky and dark and lights everywhere, and it would be the best ride.
Shut up and take my money.
Yeah, so Disney, this is my freebie for you. Take the pavilion, stop using it for wine and convention stuff, and make it a ride pavilion again. You're welcome.
Epcot is very low on rides right now.
It super is.
And I would very much
It's
be
the
into
park
that.
You go to drink in now, and I'm just saying you could bring a ride back, and it would be tied back into Marvel, because you're already doing a lot of Marvel stuff in Epcot already, and you're welcome.
Plus, you've already got a buzz on from drinking in the rest of Epcot, so you're going to enjoy it even more. Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, my only hot take is that given the success of Ant-Man and the fact that people like movies involving a lot of shrinking, just Disney, you own Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Bring it back. It's time to make
You're
new
Honey,
I Shrunk.
You're not going to feel the way you did as a kid about it.
That's right, Danny.
But here's the thing. If kids watch it and do get that feeling, then that's still reward enough for me.
Do you think it will? Because now everything, there's so much CGI, and it was really novel at the time. Do you think kids would even be as impressed with it?
I don't know. This is a whole other conversation. I was looking at it because I hadn't seen it in a while, and it's got that, the dad is a weird scientist, and we don't really have that anymore. The closest thing we have is this. Hank Pym is the weird scientist dad, but it's executed in such a different way, and that is sort of why I feel like you could make it now, because it would be done in a way that is so fundamentally different. You wouldn't have a Rick Moranis dad. It would have to be a completely kind of science dad, because that's not the kind of science dad we have in 2018.
That's right.
Anyway, hey, what do you I can't wait for you to tell us what you think about this stuff. How do you feel about that Epcot ride? How do you feel about Honey, I Shrunk the Kids? What did you think about Ant-Man and the Wasp in general? What are your thoughts on the Star Wars situation, the whole complexity of fandoms that you get so into that maybe you lose sight of
reality. Danny's asking for Twitter threads.
Yeah, I just want all of them. Send them to me. Give everybody else a break. I never get them.
I need to talk to about people with Epcot. I mean, I need to talk. I just Epcot forever.
Sorry.
Send all this nice stuff to Nella. Send all the garbage to me. And please, first of all, thank you for listening to this podcast. If you are not subscribed to the Who Won the Week podcast, please do so. Leave us a review. We love them, even if they're meme ones. I will still take a mean review over no review at all.
Done.
Thank you, Jordan. And if you're not listening to the other Sci-Fi Wire podcasts, get on it. Phantom Files is still going.
Yes, it is. Every single week, Phantom Files. Next week, you know, I just did a podcast from Disney World. I spoke with an Imagineer and some theme park people. Who run the magazine attractions down in Florida. An entire magazine devoted to theme parks. It's wild. Next week, it's Annalisa Filion, who's talked to us about Looking for Leia and the Star Wars stuff that we talked about today. And then we'll be live every day at Comic-Con, talking to people on the Hall H line.
Great.
Yes.
Oh, so, I wonder what we'll be doing with Who Won the Week. But that'll be coming soon. We're going to probably talk about San Diego a little bit next week, since the week after that, that's where we'll be. But yeah, so check out those podcasts and also check out the Amazon stuff that we're doing now, which is also like short form podcasts, Untold Story, Geeksplain, and Debate Club. All pretty solid, I got to say. And again, thank you for listening. We really appreciate it. Before we wrap up, where can folks find each of you, my shared co-hosts, on the internet?
People can find me on Twitter and Instagram at RockTheFaces.
People can find me at Jordan Zakarin. Should I spell it? Should I do it?
Yeah, do it.
JORDANZAKARIN. That's Twitter.
People can find me on Twitter at Nelchronism, and they can also find my soon-to-launch podcast, Apocalypse Book Club, at ApocalypseC on Twitter. So stay tuned.
Or meet her in person at Epcot.
Wow. There you go.
Thank you so much for joining us, by the way.
This was a fun time.
Special guest.
Yeah. And my name is Danny Roth, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary also with one N. This has been Who Won the Week. Thank you for winning our week. We'll see you again next week.